Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Want to escape the high temperatures? Take shelter at the movies. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly flick or explosive action, you've got lots of new releases to choose from. And if you'd rather watch from the comfort of your couch, new titles are now making their way to streaming services just weeks after their premiere, so the wait won't be long. Here to talk about the hottest films this summer is Max Weiss, editor-in-chief of Baltimore Magazine and a film and pop culture critic. Max, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
In Jordan Peele's new sci-fi horror film, Nope, a brother and sister defend the family farm against what they believe is an unidentified flying object. Let's listen.
Cinecloud. Cinecloud.
OJ! It's Cinecloud!
Was Nope a yep for you?
Yes, it really was. Of course, Jordan Peele kind of broke onto the scene with Get Out, which was so amazing. And then I found out that he was going to sort of stay in this horror genre. And I was a little disappointed almost because I thought this guy has such prodigious gifts. I want to see him expand beyond that particular kind of film. But turns out, you can do so much within that genre. He followed Get Out with Us, which I really loved, which sort of explored civility and who gets to be civilized and who doesn't. And now we've got Nope, which I have to say, it's not really horror. It's a mashup. It's sci-fi, it's horror, it's some comedy, and it's very much a Western as well, which is really interesting. And all of his films are parables about race. In this case, it's a parable about Hollywood and spectacle and the human need to see spectacle and how almost destructive that could be, that idea of like wanting to look at the car crash or wanting to look at this sort of horrible thing and why are we so drawn to those things. But I love the film. The acting is amazing. Daniel Kaluuya and Kiki Palmer are so great. The cinematography is gorgeous. I feel like Jordan Peele was very influenced by Steven Spielberg, and this has that kind of shimmering beauty of like a Close Encounters or something like that. It's a weird film. There's a lot to chew on, but I was captivated by it, and I actually can't wait to see it again.
Well, at Comic-Con, Jordan Peele said this is a movie for people who say they don't like horror. So, I mean, how scary is it compared to some of his other?
The truth is, I don't like super scary films. I have always had a tolerance for his scary films, and I think it's partly because, A, they're not that scary, but also because I think that what I object to is scares for scares' sake, you know, jump scares or scares without context or character development. In this case, you're very, very engrossed in the story and watching what's happening. And so when the scares do come, it's just part of the overall experience of the movie that you're so engaged with. So I would say even people who think they don't like horror films can really handle this one. And again, it does feel a little more like in the science fiction realm than the horror realm. So yeah, grown-ups can definitely handle this one.
Okay, so let's move to something else. With a nearly perfect score on movie review site Rotten Tomatoes, Top Gun Maverick is the quintessential summer action flick. It's been 36 years since Top Gun premiered. How does this sequel pick up the story?
Well, it's so funny because I remember when Top Gun first came out and I was, you know, a kid, and I thought it was terrible, just corporate trash, you know, what sellouts, you know, I just sort of had a disdain for that sort of thing. And now here we are all these years later, and this kind of old-fashioned rah-rah action movie with an old-fashioned movie star, Tom Cruise, the kind that we don't really see much anymore, suddenly feels downright quaint, when you compare it to sort of all the Marvel cinematic universes and things like that. And I found myself really rooting for this film, which, by the way, is a much better film than the original, because I actually rewatched the original just to sort of remind myself, you know, what I was watching. And, you know, this film has Maverick. At this point, he's still a pilot. He should be a colonel at this point, but he's not, because he's always a rebel. And then he teaches a group of young renegades who sort of remind him of himself, and takes them on one dangerous mission. And there's a very touching scene with Val Kilmer, who was his sort of nemesis slash, you know, frenemy in the original, who was, as we know, has been sick for a while. And they have a scene together that just shows that the affection between Tom Cruise, the actor, and Val Kilmer, the actor, it's very respectful of their characters, of the legacy of the film. Plus, Top Gun Maverick is just really exciting. It's cheesy, but in a good way, in an intentional way. It's really fun to see just Tom Cruise just do his movie star thing. There's a reason he was at one time the most famous man, you know, in the world. He's just really good at what he does. And I was, you know, really pleasantly surprised by how much I enjoyed Top Gun Maverick.
Cheesy in a good way. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. Like Ray Charles, Elton John, and Freddie Mercury, Elvis Presley joins the biopic pack with director Baz Luhrmann's latest.
You're looking for trouble? You came to the right place. If you're looking for trouble, just look right in my face.
Presley is played by 30-year-old actor Austin Butler. How did he do?
I think he did amazingly well. I mean, I feel like playing Elvis is the ultimate challenge, because there have been so many Elvis impersonators. So at some point you feel like you're doing an impression of an impression. But he really made Elvis his own. And I think that he embodied the character. He has a great voice. He's got great moves. He's got a sex appeal. He captures that sort of sneaky Elvis grin and that je ne sais quoi that made Elvis so sexy and so appealing. And he is so committed to the role. I mean, the best scenes in the movie are the ones where he's on stage, you know, recreating some of Elvis's concerts, and they're riveting. As for the film, I liked it. I liked it more than I thought I would, because I'm not a big fan of Baz Luhrmann. He made The Great Gatsby and Moulin Rouge and Romeo and Juliet. And he's a very show-offy director. His films tend to be very sort of maximalist, very cluttered and busy. And, he, you know, you always feel like his name comes before the credits. It's not The Great Gatsby. It's Baz Luhrmann's The Great Gatsby. It's not Elvis. It's Baz Luhrmann's Elvis. So the guy is a bit much. But I have to say, you know, partly because of Austin Butler's performance, partly because the subject matter is so interesting. He gets into the whole Colonel Parker and how he was this Svengali figure who...
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. Elvis is told from the perspective of his manager, Colonel Tom Parker, played by Tom Hanks. What did you think of that choice?
Well, you know, it's funny. I love Tom Hanks. I think he's one of our great actors. I think he's actually underrated in a way, because he's just so comfortable in every role that he plays. And he has a kind of naturalism in the same way Jimmy Stewart was, you know, often underrated as an actor. Although I think Tom Hanks is perhaps even a better actor. Didn't love his Colonel Parker. Now, he's putting on a strange accent, which I'm sure was the actual accent of the Colonel. And he's got prosthetics and a lot of, you know, fake body fat and makeup. And the whole thing felt a little over the top. I don't really blame Tom Hanks. I more blame Baz Luhrmann, because I don't think he was able to turn this man into a character. He's more like a straight up villain. But I would say this is, and I am a huge Tom Hanks fan, this is not my favorite of his performances.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with Baltimore Magazine editor-in-chief and film critic Max Weiss about must-see films of the summer. In Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, a cute little shell searches for his family. This is a full-length film based on a series of viral YouTube videos.
Yes, and I loved those viral videos. I thought they were so curiously delightful and funny. But I did wonder, how they were going to be able to translate this into a feature film. And you know what? Darned if they didn't do it. They really capture the magic and the humor of those videos. I can't explain it because I generally have an aversion to cutesy things. And you could make the case that Marcel the Shell with shoes on is cutesy, but it's just so darn funny and charming. And the film is beautiful in its own way. It's about how Marcel gets separated from his pack and a documentary filmmaker who he becomes friends with helps him try to find his family. It's just laugh out loud funny. I think it is for the whole family, for sure. You can definitely bring your children. But honestly, adults will enjoy it too, because, you know, like a lot of kids' films, there are sly jokes that only adults will get. And I have to say, Jenny Slate, the voice that she finds for Marcel is so singular and so affecting. And yeah, it's really a very charming film.
And as if the summer hasn't been hot enough, volcanoes are the heart and soul of the documentary Fire of Love. You saw this at the Maryland Film Festival earlier this year.
Yes, I absolutely love this film. It's going to, without a doubt, factor in my best of the year list. As I said in my review, I never used to believe in soulmates, and then I saw this movie, and now I believe in soulmates. And in this case, the soulmates are a pair of volcanologists. I'm not sure if that's the right phrase, but they are a couple that both love volcanoes, are obsessed with volcanoes, study them, and they found each other, and they fell in love, and they devoted their lives to chasing volcanoes, studying volcanoes, photographing them, filming them, writing about them. And they got married. They never had children because the volcanoes were their children. And they took so much footage of their death-defying adventures. I mean, they were both obsessives. And in a way, they loved the volcanoes maybe even more than they loved each other, but they found each other and they loved each other. So this film works as a nature film. I mean, it's absolutely stunning to see the footage of these volcanoes, which are scary and thrilling and beautiful. And it's also really a love story about this couple that just perfectly found each other. So I could not recommend this film more highly. It's really quite, I think it's playing at the Charles Theater right now. It's just really good stuff.
Max, thank you for all this. What fun.
Anytime, Sheila.
Max Weiss is editor-in-chief of Baltimore Magazine and a film and pop culture critic. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have links to her reviews. Short break on the record. When we're back, cult hits and classic films. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. As you scroll through titles on Netflix or HBO Max, you might start a list of films you want to watch, only to find when you check back later, you're out of luck. The streaming service no longer carries that film. If this is you, Beyond Video is the place to turn. Eric Hatch is a film writer, a film festival consultant, and the co-owner of Beyond Video, a nonprofit volunteer-run video library in Baltimore. Thanks for joining us, Eric.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
How many movies does Beyond Video have for members to check out?
We're just about at 27,000. We're approaching that number now.
And these are what formats?
They are primarily DVD. So sort of in order, I would say about 20,000 DVDs, maybe about 6,000 Blu-rays. And we even still have a smattering of VHS, mostly titles that have not been ported over to higher definition formats.
And some of these are films that have never been carried by streaming services?
Oh, I would say a large number. Yeah. I mean, when you're amassing a large collection of physical media and opening it up to the public, you find out that everyone has a favorite movie that they can't find somewhere, you know, whether it's an obscure foreign film or even a blockbuster like The Abyss. I don't know if it's popped back on any streaming services, but when we first opened, it was a popular renter because people couldn't find it.
So, Eric, we asked you here this morning to share recommendations from all eras and genres. Let's start with the documentary, Ascension. What's this about?
Yeah, this is a look at sort of 21st century capitalism in different strata of Chinese society. So a lot of it is looking with sort of a tongue-in-cheek at nouveau riche in China. So we have people who are newly wealthy sitting down for party planning lessons and etiquette lessons. We look at bodyguards who are going to a training school so that they can protect these newly rich individuals. But it's also sort of an immersive experiential look at their leisure time, like the world's largest amusement park and water slide. And then it delves into also the factory life of people who are sort of the supply chain for this. And so looking at everything from a sex doll factory to just more common production assembly lines, the whole thing is very kinetic and has some surprising humor to it. And Dan Deacon, a Baltimore musician, is the composer for it. And this film was nominated for Best Documentary at the Oscars. So lots of reasons to watch this one.
So from that relatively recent documentary, I want to ask you about The Devil in a Blue Dress, recently reissued by the Criterion Collection. Denzel Washington and Don Cheadle star. It's part of the neo-noir genre. What is that?
Yeah, so these are films that harken back to the 40s and 50s, sort of very stark gangster movies, often set in the big city like New York or LA. And so, you know, one of the prime examples from the 90s would be LA Confidential, which is a film that I think Devil in a Blue Dress holds its own with in terms of quality and maybe even surpasses. These are, you know, sweaty, gritty gangster and detective stories. And directed by Carl Franklin, who's a director who has been working mostly in TV lately and hasn't really gotten his due. But I think that Denzel and him are a perfect pairing, and people who watch this film will realize it's a modern classic.
Modern, it came out in 1995, right?
Sure. So modern, relative to the Beyond Video collection, rather, that has quite a bit of silent films, you know. I would say, in my head, modern means maybe 1980 and on, but that might not be everybody's frame of reference.
Next up, the sci-fi dark comedy Strawberry Mansion.
Arabella Isadora at your service. What can I do for you, young man?
Ma'am, did you send me this letter?
Yes, I suppose I did.
Miss Isadora, it appears we have no tax records
Please
for you.
Please call me Bella.
Bella? It appears we have no tax records for you or your property.
Oh, I see.
I'm here to perform a preliminary audit.
So you'd like to come in?
Yes, ma'am. The sooner I get started, the sooner I'll be out of your hair.
What kind of audit is going on here?
So Starry Mansion, which was made in Maryland, shot just outside Baltimore, with one of the directors being a Marylander, Albert Burney. This is in the tradition of Terry Gilliam. And so the auditor that you hear in the clip is a dream auditor. And what he does is when people haven't been paying taxes on products or services that they've dreamed, he has to go door to door and watch a recording of their dream and make sure that those taxes are collected. And this is not so much about the nuts and bolts of his work. This is more about a special case that derails his whole life and career.
Wow. I can't wait to see that. That's Eric Hatch of Beyond Video on the record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about his movie recommendations as well as popular rentals at Beyond Video, a library run by volunteers. One film that's been flying off your shelves, I understand, is a documentary set in Ethiopia titled Faya Dei. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this is a film that Jessica Bashir, who is Mexican and Ethiopian by descent, directed in Ethiopia. It's a really beautiful and atmospheric film that's largely about the culture and commerce surrounding, and I hope I'm saying this right, the khat plant, K-H-A-T, which is harvested for a number of reasons, but is a narcotic and a hallucinogen that people can become addicted to. So it might sound depressing, but actually, I mean, it's really a beautiful work of portraiture, both of individuals, but also of the community and of the location. And I think, you know, this is her first feature, and I think this is a major talent to watch.
Now let's take a dip in La Piscine, French for the pool. You have this 1969 film on your list. It's a psychological thriller that I think may not cool off the people who watch it.
Yeah, I mean, this might be, along with Knife in the Water, the sort of first erotic thriller that kind of made that a genre term. But yeah, this is starring Alain Delon, and it's sort of couples, both of whom have their own problems and both of whom have their interpersonal histories with each other, all vacationing around this one pool in a mansion on the Riviera. But as you might imagine, there's some intrigue, there's some infidelity, there's some secrets, and everything sort of comes to a head. And, you know, this was re-released, I think, last year by Criterion, but it just really hasn't cooled down. Like you said, we especially in the hot months of summer, rent this one quite a bit.
From La Piscine to The Swimmer, Burt Lancaster stars in this 1968 drama based on a short story. Lancaster plays a well-off ad man who takes on a strange journey. Tell us about that journey.
Yeah, so this is another summer one, but not necessarily a refreshing dip in the pool. Burt Lancaster is this affluent guy who decides in his Connecticut neighborhood he's going to swim across town. And what he means by that is taking a dip in each of his neighbor's pool from one end of the neighborhood to the other. But with each encounter, we sort of have this existential ennui that grows, where he starts to notice that people maybe don't perceive him the way he thought they did. And these seemingly casual encounters start to mount into him looking inward and realizing that there's something a little hollow about the life he's made for himself.
Hmm. And finally, actor James Caan died last month at age 82. You recommend his performance in the 1981 heist movie Thief. Here's part of a scene where James Caan's character, Frank, a professional jewel thief, meets with an old flame, Jesse.
It got twisted and ugly and empty. It was over already, but we kept moving through the moves. It ended very badly. Now I get up in the morning, I take a shower, I go to work, I have a job, I have a social security card, and my life is very ordinary, very boring, which is good. Because it's solid.
You're marking time is what you are. You're backing off, you're hiding out, you're waiting for a bus that you hope never comes because you don't want to get on anyway because you don't want to go anywhere, all right?
Do you have a license for this?
Thief is a favorite at Beyond Video. Why do you think it's still so popular?
A lot of it is the core central performance by James Caan. You know, he's oozing charisma in this one, and it's one of his best films as featured star rather than as ensemble cast or supporting player. But I also think it's got so many things going for it. It's Michael Mann, who would go on to be the main creative force behind Miami Vice and, you know, the director of Heat. This is sort of his first film in his signature thriller style. And it's very methodical. It's very well researched. I mean, James Caan actually, let's say, shadowed some actual safe breakers to learn how to do exactly that. So it's a cut above the average thriller, and it's sort of got one foot in the 70s. You know, the sort of gritty new American cinema of the 70s, and one foot in the sort of neon lights, high octane 80s kind of film. So yeah, people were already returning to this one pretty regularly, but since James Caan passed, it's you know, we just can't keep it on the shelf.
Eric, thanks for letting us peek into your collection.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Eric Hatch is co-owner of Beyond Video, a nonprofit, volunteer-run video library in Baltimore. We have a list of all of his recommendations at the On the Record page at wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us on the record. Come back tomorrow.